You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, an announcement this week about the newest member of our human family, Floris Man, or woman, if you like. Though only 3 feet tall, these people were talented hunters and toolmakers. They lived on the island of Flores in Indonesia about 18,000 years ago. And I know you're saying, hey, that wasn't too long ago, 18,000 years. That's kind of interesting. And the scientists are saying that themselves. And the unearthing of their skeletons has made scientists wonder, reconsider our human ancestry because they lived so close in time to us. If you think about it, Floris Man was alive when Homo erectus, Neanderthal Man, and our own ancestors, Homo sapiens, populated the region. That's more company than scientists thought Homo sapiens had at the time in our evolutionary history. Could they all have lived at the same time? And why isn't Floris Man standing next to you on the subway today? Well, maybe he was, but why isn't he around today? He's not, we don't think. But there are reports from that island as late as 100 years ago that there was some sort of tiny person, people running around those islands. And people are starting to reconsider that. Maybe in the jungles they're still out there. We'll talk about it. It was published this week in the issue of the journal Nature by a team of Australian researchers. And today we're going to talk about that find with a scientist a little closer to home. Rick Potts is a paleoanthropologist and director of the Human Origins Program at the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian in Washington. He joined us today by phone from his office. Welcome to the program, Dr. Potts.
Thank you very much, Ira.
Pretty exciting?
Yes, it's terrifically exciting. I first heard some rumors about this find a few weeks ago, and when I saw the photographs and read the article this week, I thought, my goodness, what a bizarre little creature this was.
Tell us about what would he or she look like?
Well, would have stood, as you say, about a little bit over 3 feet tall, would have been about half the size of the body size of a hominid or early human that we would expect from that age, but was extremely small-brained. I think that's one of the most surprising things of it, that it had a brain size that was described as the size of a grapefruit.
Yet, from what I read in the paper, it could still make, it was a great hunter, it could make great tools, even with the small brain size.
Yeah. It seems as if there is a case where this population was stranded on the island, and it perhaps underwent its own evolutionary trajectory that included making improvements over what we would expect in the stone tools of its ancestor, an ancestor known as Homo erectus, which was known from Eastern Asia, going back to at least a million years.
If you have a species of humans like that who have such a small brain case, but can make these tools that we didn't think they would be able to with the brain size, does that mean there's something that has to be reevaluated here?
Well, it's interesting. I think it is making us reevaluate the relationship of brain size to body size. But when you think of it, modern humans today, there have been so-called great thinkers among us where their brain sizes have ranged or have differed from a factor of two, anywhere from, say, 1,000 cubic centimeters to well over 2,000 cubic centimeters. And they are able to function perfectly fine as intelligent beings. And it seems that once brains get to a certain size, size no longer matters. It's all about the wiring inside the brain. And it seems that this may have been a case of that with regard to the descendant of this earlier human Homo erectus.
Now, this skeleton has been placed about 18,000 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But there are reports that other skeletons at the site maybe as young as 13,000 years ago.
Yeah, I've heard of those reports too. In fact, I've heard a report that they may have as many as six other skeletons or partial skeletons known from this cave on the island of Flores at this time, and they may range from about 13,000 years back to something like 80 or 95,000 years ago.
So were there other species of humans living at that time? Were they living at, at the same time?
Right, yeah. Well, of course, one of the most remarkable things is that even just 18,000, perhaps as recently as 13,000 years ago, that this new species, as the researchers have defined it, was walking around on Earth the same time as us, but also back to at least least 50,000 years ago, there may have been four different species of early humans walking around on the Earth: the Neanderthals, the last remaining populations of Homo erectus, and then Florus man, and then, of course, us.
Do you think that the Florus man could have evolved from Homo erectus, full-sized one?
Yeah, that is, in fact, the case that's made by the researchers, and I think that they've put forth a really good case for that. If you look at the skull, it has an overall shape that's not quite as rounded as a modern human skull. It has a fairly large brow ridge, even on such a small skull, and it has other features that look like the skulls of Homo erectus. But it also has some other traits that are a bit strange because of the dwarfing or reduction in size of this creature that are even reminiscent of earlier hominids back to 3 million years ago.
But so then, how do you go from this large size, full size Homo erectus down to this dwarfing and a total different body shape over evolution?
Right. The researchers actually take on a number of different possibilities here, including the ways in which modern a human can be dwarfed by genetic modifications of the mutations of things that affect the gland system and the hormonal system, such as pituitary dwarfing. But they eliminate those possibilities based on a variety of different lines of evidence. And what they show is that this is a case that is exactly parallel with the kind of dwarfing of elephants and deer and many other animals that are known that get stuck on islands. They become isolated, and due to the reduction in the amount of resources for eating and feeding the body, it becomes economical to become smaller in size and to evolve a smaller size. And so that's the explanation that seems to apply here.
Oh, so once the Florens, before he was a Flores man, he was on a different island and came and swam or got somehow to this island and then evolved, isolated on an island like we see other things evolving isolated and characteristics that were unique?
Yes, that's right. That if, in fact, Flores man was derived from Homo erectus, mm-hmm. The outset of it would have been an individual, a population with a body that was perhaps 5.5 feet tall to maybe even 6 feet tall, and with a brain size that maybe would have been 2 grapefruit size. Uh-huh. And then over time then, after this isolation, however they got to this island, which would have involved crossing some body of water,
right,
they became isolated and became dwarfed.
Let's go to the phones. Katie in Geneva, New York. Hi, Katie.
Yes. What are the theories for why Flores man no longer exists?
Well, that's an interesting one, Katie. Explaining the extinction of species is a difficult one. Of course, we know about many other animals that they become, in cases of isolation on islands, they can't maintain their breeding population, or simply the climate changes. And if they're isolated and can't get off the island, then they dwindle in numbers to the point of extinction. We don't have really enough information about environmental change on the island of Flores that affected the island of Flores to know. But one thing that the researchers suggest is that there is a large volcanic eruption nearby, and that could have been enough to blanket the landscape, change the food supply, and perhaps that was the event that drove Flores man to extinction.
Good question, Kay.
I have one other one,
sure,
if I may.
If it's as good as that one, go ahead.
How many skulls of Flores man have been found, or partial skulls?
Well, there is one that is very complete that was described in the article, the scientific article in the journal Nature that came out this week. They also described a single lower tooth of a premolar or bicuspid tooth. But now, again, according to reports that are coming out in the media, that they may have a number of other skeletons, and we don't know yet how many skulls are connected to those bodies. But I'm sure that they have more, and that's going to be really interesting to see what the variation within this new species was like.
Yeah.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
And probably a Flores woman there, too, among.
Well, that's right. In fact, this skeleton is an adult female skeleton, and so really should be called Flores woman, and that's what I would prefer.
I'm pushing it as hard as I can this hour. get that name right. You know, whenever we talk about fossils and whatever, and especially fossils that may be only 13,000 or more years old, Is there any possibility of DNA that might be pulled out of these things?
Well, that's a good question. They don't really describe how mineralized or how fossilized the bones of this one skeleton are. They don't describe that in the article, but that would be very interesting to look at to see if something like that can be found. It's been very difficult to pull that out of skeletons, but there is DNA that has been recovered from the skeletons of Neanderthals that go back over 50,000 years ago.
You know, whenever these things come out, the news stories start abounding about people who've seen or heard or whatever. And there are stories circulating this week about cases of 100 years ago where residents of these islands used to talk about it, some species of a person looking like, but a small person running around in the jungles. And they were dismissing these things right out. We now consider this. Maybe Flores man or woman is still around in parts of the jungles we've never gotten into?
Well, it's possible. I would be a little bit skeptical that in any idea that would relate those legends to this particular new branch of the human family tree. The reason why is that if you go to many societies that have stories, legends about small people, if you pursue it far enough, you also realize that they have stories about giant people. And and it would be interesting to see if that's the case in island Indonesia and Flores. So it's hard at this stage to know whether those legends really reflect anything about actual sightings of this this being.
If we assume that Flores woman was derived from a Homo erectus, paint a little bit of the branches of the tree that leads to Homo sapiens, where that would fit in.
Right. Yes. It's important to understand here that this particular fossil and this particular new branch of the human family tree is a side branch to the main story of the origin of Homo sapiens. And so what we have is the human fossil record goes back now to 6 million years before the present, and we know that at least by 4 million years ago that there was a branching of the human family tree, a multiplication of species, and then after a history of millions of years of origin of species and then extinction and becoming more human-like, that we then had, as I say, about 50,000 years ago, four species hanging on, and one of them was becoming a little bit more successful, and that was our own species, Homo sapiens, which began to spread out of what looks like now probably an African origin about 100,000 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And so what we have in this case is Flores man is a remnant of an earlier spread of hominids out of Africa going back to nearly 2 million years ago, the first spread out of Africa, leading to Homo erectus spreading into Asia. Homo erectus then was in Eastern Asia for a considerable period of time. One of those populations somehow rafted out onto the island of Flores and became stuck there, and leading to this island dwarfing and its own evolutionary branch.
We've been reading various scientists calling this the most important anthropological find of the past 50 years. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's not so important that it really changes our understanding and our lines of evidence regarding the origin of Homo sapiens. But to sort of strike an analogy here, it's as if we've all been studying in this enormous laboratory where we could see all the different, what we thought were all of the different experiments, evolutionary experiments in human evolution. And then all of a sudden now we go to another part of the building and realize there's this little laboratory that's doing something completely different. And so that's really interesting and important to know that there's this kind of possibility of diversity and creativity in our evolutionary picture.
Talking with Rick Potts this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Would that say, hey, let's say to me, hey, let's go into some more of these islands, you know?
Right. And I believe that the researchers are planning to do this. This is a research team that combines Indonesian scientists and Australian scientists. And all I can say is that a lot of us wish them a ton of luck in going to these other islands or looking in other caves and seeing what other aspects of diversity in our family tree there might be.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if I can get a quick phone call from Michael in Denver. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
I have a question for you, sort of a general evolution question. how come, if evolution is true, and I'm inclined to believe it is, why don't we see other hominids that are, you know, making their way up the chain? We go from, you know, apes to us.
Right, that's a good question. Well, one of our understandings about the evolutionary process is that it involves the adaptation of populations to local environments. And so the Flores man situation is a perfectly good example of that, where this this one population becomes stuck on this island, adapted to the isolation of this island. And so if in fact that is the case, that natural selection and adaptation to local environments is the way evolution works, which we certainly believe it is, then you can have a whole variety of branches of the human family tree that are adapting to local environments, and it just turns out that that one of them, in a fairly tortuous history of becoming larger in population and then shrinking in population size, happens to have the right genetic mutations and adapt to the right changes in environments that occur, that happens to produce us.
Thanks for calling. Now, Dr. Potts, I know that you, through the grapevine, that you're really big on Halloween celebrations this year.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
If you were to dress up like the florist woman, what would you have to wear and do, things like that?
Well, I'd have to make brow ridges for myself, and that would be a lot of fun. I don't have any at the moment, and I'd have to shrink my brain and make it look a little bit more like a flattened soccer ball, or maybe even a football. I'd have to have my face would have to stick out a little bit more than it already does, and I'd have to shrink my skull, get a little bit smaller in body size, but keep my teeth around the same size. That's one of the things that's interesting about this, is that the teeth look large relative to the rest of the skull.
And if somebody were, you know, could you say that, like, about Neanderthal, if they're standing next to you on the subway, you wouldn't know the difference if they had their clothes on or whatever? Could that be true here?
We'd know it. We would know it for sure. We would be, I think, struck by the tiny size of the skull, and would wonder at first whether we were looking at a kid, but in fact, we'd be looking at an adult.
Is that what the researchers, too, also thought they had found a child when they uncovered it?
That's my understanding, is that they thought it was a child, and of course that would be a natural thing to think, given how small the thigh bone was, for example, and the overall size of the skull.
Well, happy Halloween to you.
Well, thank you, and to everyone else, too.
Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
My pleasure, Ira.
Rick Potts is a paleoanthropologist and the director of the Human Origins Program at the National Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington. And we're going to take a break, switch gears, tweak up the show, and come back and talk about the antibiotic crisis. Where are new antibiotics coming from? Well, they're not. Why is that, and are we in trouble? Stay with us. We'll be right back.